Welcome to the Flow Tracy Monday Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:46 p.m. and that is Central Time, and today is August 22nd. Now, I thought I would kick off today and really just concentrate on the performance of banking indices. And one of the good reasons for that is because banks generally tend to lead, because credit generally tends to lead equity. And I thought sticking with just kicking off in Asia and moving our way westward. Japan, where the Topix Banks Index is back in the region of the peak from back in 2015. And we need to zoom out quite a bit to see just where this is in terms of the history, because it's the upper side of the base formation that's been underway really since 2008. Now, back in 2003, there was a good sized rebound in the banks. And I think that really did help to check the entire malaise over the preceding decades. And when we look at the phenomenal price appreciation in the late 1980s, then the price where we are right now is a distant shade of that performance. But Japan's banks are looking more impressive. And this is clearly as a result of the yield curve control. So Japan is actively devaluing the currency and trying to promote inflationary pressures. That's making the residual loans that were taken out a long time ago, sitting on bank balance sheets for all that time, not looking as onerous as they have in the past. Now, the 10-year yield is coming up to 66 basis points and approaching the levels at which the Bank of Japan has said that it would intervene. Of course, they left their statement at the last meeting very open. So they basically said that they're definitely going to defend the 50 basis point level. Oh, they're absolutely going to defend 75 and without question 100 basis points. And of course, what it basically means is that they want to slow the depreciation of the bond market. But yields are certainly ramping higher. Now, when we think about the yield curve, well, we can then think about the 10-year yield is still around 66 basis points, but you go out to 15 years and you're up to over 1%. And then the negative yields that have been a distinct feature of the Japanese bond market at the short end of the curve, well, they're narrowing as well. The 3-month is now only negative by 12 basis points. But then let's look at China's banks. Now, of course, these are one state or one extent or another. They are controlled by the government or arms of the organs of the government, I think would probably be the most correct term. Now, the index was in positive territory today, but not in a dynamic manner. You can't even see it on the weekly chart. And it's been ranging now for the last 8 years, and we're at the lower side of the range. And there's a distinct downward bias to trading. Well, I think when we think then about what's going on in China, a lot of the growth over the last decade has been fueled by debt. Now they're attempting to unwind some of that leverage, and that is taking a really quite profound impact on the property developers. At the same time, the foot traffic in Macau is surging. And then we have tourist spots that are replete with Chinese tourists. So certainly the population at large are those that have the financial resources, at least to travel internationally, are doing quite well. It's everyone else is having a bit of a problem. But certainly that is helping to support the cruise lines, and both Royal Caribbean and Carnival are among the best performing stocks on the S&P 500 this year. And then Marriott is approaching a new all-time high as well. And this is against a background where the Chinese economy is slowing down. So this is also really quite similar to what we're seeing in lots of other countries, where the consumer demand is certainly evident, but that there are underlying stresses inside the economy that are having an impact. Now let's think about what's going on in Singapore. So, as a major asset management jurisdiction, then the health of the Chinese economy and the Indian economy have a knock-on effect for what's happening in Singapore. And the Straits Times All Share Financials is pulling back again. So it's coming back down towards the lower side of this range. And it's been a very choppy market over the last several years. And even before the pandemic, we'd been in an environment where it had just been chopping around for years before that. Then let's look at the Australian financials. Now, of course, this also includes some of the insurance companies, but we also have an environment here where it has been trending, excuse me, ranging below the 7,000 level for several years already. And this is still shy of the peaks that were put in back in 2007. Now, in an environment where you have floating rates and rising interest rates, that's going to put pressure on mortgage holders, or indeed anyone who has to go off and either refinance or borrow more money. And obviously, this is having a knock-on effect. Now, let's come in and look at what's going on in Europe. So, the Euro Stoxx Banks Index has been going in the opposite direction, and it is improving. So Europe has been in a banking malaise now for a really quite long time, and the index is still well shy of where the peaks were back in 2007, and it might be an awfully long time before they get back to anything approaching those levels. And by that I mean potentially decades, but at least the index is not breaking lower. And there is the possibility here that with the ECB attempting to get inflation under control, and there is obviously some measures underway to try and support banks, that the European banking sector at least is not on the list of priorities in terms of the stresses in the global economy at present, which is certainly a welcome departure from how things have been performing over the last decade. Then the UK banking index has dropped back down to a new reaction low. Now, it's been jolly choppy over the course of the last 18 months, and there have been some significant downdrafts. And now we're potentially looking at another one of those. The big challenge for the UK is that almost the entire mortgage market is floating rate, or that it's on short fixes, and there are a large number of people that will be refixing both this month and last month, but all the way through the next couple of years. And they're going to be refixing, of course, at much higher levels. And I don't think anyone has the fortitude right now to embark upon a floating rate note, even if that might not be such a bad idea if one were to think about where the trajectory of interest rates is likely. Are we going to see another doubling in interest rates, or are we more likely to see interest rate cuts within the year? I think fixing at this particular point isn't particularly advantageous either. But the banking sector is under pressure here. And I think it's also perhaps interesting to just pay attention to what's happening to the money center banks in the UK. So HSBC has pulled back sharply following its earnings, and of course it has exposure to China and Hong Kong. And then let's also look at UBS. So that's the big bank left in Switzerland. Now, of course, because it has a near monopoly, then it's in a rather charmed environment. They've basically been gifted Credit Suisse, and that's certainly being reflected in the strength of the stock. It also basically means that they're not going to be allowed to go bust. The reality is that now, with one big global bank, Switzerland has got a commitment to either break it up and ensure that each of the components is a viable entity, or now they are encumbered with a company that is too big to fail, literally. And then Let's just then pay attention to the international banks in Europe. Santander, for example, it remains really quite firm, and it has substantial revenues coming out of Latin America. So that's also quite positive. But now let's turn our attention to how banking sectors are performing in the USA. And regional banks rebounded very impressively from the lows back in October and now are encountering resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average and to the lower side of the overhead trading range. This is a type 3 top formation, and there's nothing on the chart to say that we're not going to see additional downside here. Then let's spin that up and look at the S&P 500 Banks Index, and it's also pulling back this time from the region of the 1,000-day moving average. We've had two good-sized downward dynamics over the last couple of weeks. Now, here also, I think it's important to look at some of the money center banks. Now, money center banks generally are those that lend to other banks and lend to governments. And Bank of America, for example, is also pulling back rather sharply in here. Wells Fargo doesn't look bullish either, and it's also pulling back and down through the 200-day moving average now, having failed at the upper side of its range. And then Citigroup looks like the proverbial death. It's breaking down to test the lower side of this, or at least test the lows that have been put in 2020 and then again in 2015. And we have to go. I think look at the length of history. That Citigroup was heavily impaired in 2008, and it has not recovered. And it seems to have found itself another way to lose money in here. So then the clear standout over the last decade among the money center banks has been JP Morgan. And even here, it's overbought and unwinding that overbought condition, and still susceptible to additional downside. I've been particularly cautious about looking at Goldman Sachs, and simply because all the growth in the company over the last decade has come from the asset management sector, and they've taken over the hedge book for large numbers, and the number I've seen is 50% of all the hedge funds in the USA have outsourced their hedging to Goldman Sachs. And the only asset class that's big enough to hold all those assets has been commercial property. So the money that is being used as a hedge has been then put into commercial properties and put into private equity deals, which of course means that it's illiquid. And on top of that, those two sectors are very susceptible to higher interest rates. One of the things that was a clear factor in the post global financial crisis in financial in environment has been that the absence of yield was compensated for with an acceptance that liquidity wouldn't be available. So if you could get yield, then you wouldn't be able to get your money back at any time. Of course, during the pandemic, there was so much money printed, this wasn't particularly troublesome. During the global financial crisis, it was incredibly troublesome that you wouldn't be able to sell what you have. You wouldn't be able to, and then with mark-to-market rules, what was on your books was losing value every day and you couldn't sell it. So we're in at a potential environment like that right now. But the underperformance of banks has to be paid attention to. This was one of the big signals ahead of 2008. Now, I don't think we're in the same kind of situation here, but certainly there is a lot of interest rates that have gone up globally over the last year, and the 10-year yield is in the region of its peak and hovering here around 4.3%, which was an area of support back at the end of last year. And it's still steady in here. It was in mildly negative territory in here today. I think that we are more likely than not to see a deflationary environment before long. You can't continue to raise rates indefinitely without them having an impact eventually. I think Milton Keynes, excuse me, that's the wrong name. When we think about the long and variable lags from the Chicago School of Business, when they we think about that, it's only a matter of time before they start to have an impact on the wider economy. And then I think it's also important that the Dow Jones has been underperforming really quite acutely this year. And it was down another 174 points today, so it is now it's on the cusp at least of failing to sustain the breakout to new highs. And there's potential for additional downside here. Then when we look at the NASDAQ 100, well, it's still rolling over, and it popped on the upside in initial trading today and wasn't able to hold it. So we're still in an environment where it is unwinding the overbought condition relative to the 200-day moving average. Now, when we look at the performance of the Magnificent Seven, although I'm still using eight companies here, they pulled back last week, but they are outperforming this week. And so far, this ratio continues to hold. And that's eight companies representing 23.6% of the entire market of the USA. And they've been responsible for the vast majority of performance in global markets. So the NASDAQ, and this is the NASDAQ Composite, is up 29%, but it's really the performance of that seven companies. And then the Dow Jones is only up 3%. Then one clear standout here is Italy, where it's up over 20%, and that's not all just currency. And then Japan, it is up, but a lot of it is to do with the devaluation of the yen. But the performance that we've seen in Italy is primarily because of the banking sector and then also the recovery of some of the industrials, most particularly those that have some exposure to defense. And one thing that I think is particularly relevant here is that the Italian index has in fact broken out of its base formation, and it is finding support at successively higher levels. So there is certainly an argument here that Europe is coming out of a very difficult period and has been through an almost generational-long process of deleveraging. That deleveraging is still in the future for lots of other regions. Now, when we think about what's going on in terms of the war in Ukraine, well, one thing, of course, is that natural gas prices are at a higher base, or I guess a higher plateau now in Europe than they were before the invasion. Then we also have this clear expenditure of munitions in Ukraine, and countries basically just, it's almost like a fire sale of all their old inventory as they basically downsize their arsenals. So there's going to have to be a significant rearmament over the next several years. When we think then about the continued strong performance that we've seen in some of those European defense companies, we see that, for example, Rheinmetall has been steady over the last while, but it is holding all of that big gain that we've seen since the initial invasion. Now, it's quite clear that there's a big budget question going to come up for some of these US arms manufacturers over the course of the next year. There's some significant issues evolving in the US economy. We've had interest rates that are rising very aggressively, banks that are underperforming, and the best estimates of the Federal Reserve are that excess savings will be completely depleted in the third quarter. At the same time, that the student loan repayments for about 40 million people are going to kick off again in October. And on top of that, the deficit is already high, and that's before we start to see tax receipts falling. as people run out of having excess money to spend. Then the big question will be, where's the money going to come from for exceptional spending to fuel rearmament and building out manufacturing capacity for spare capacity in the armament sector? And how much tolerance will there be for that within the budget? Well, the performance that we've seen in some of these big armaments companies doesn't engender a lot of enthusiasm that there's going to be a big jump in spending. What we are seeing, though, is that companies that have a dual purpose, like Boeing, they are firming, and the share broke out following its earnings, and it is at least steady in here. And of course, airline travel is picking up, and then nights spent in hotels are picking up, and cruise lines are doing better as well. So that's the dual use type companies are certainly benefiting more than the single use defense companies. Then we've had a very strong performance from General Electric over the last several months, but even here, it's starting to look a little tired. And then one of the best performers this year has been Meta, and it's also looking tired. We had a big downward dynamic over the last couple of weeks, and it looks quite likely that we're going to see a process of mean reversion unfold. It was undervalued at 100, probably overvalued at 400. So there's quite a lot of potential for significant or lengthy ranging. The one big challenge for the big technology companies, but particularly the social media companies, is that regulation, primarily coming out of Europe, is coming down the pipe. And eventually that is going to crimp their ability to grow at an unprecedented rate, and the cost of doing business is going to rise. So that is something that is likely to feed through into more of a rangy environment overall. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.